You're listening to Agriculture Today.
For dairy producers, milk margins will still be driven largely by feed costs, milk prices, and risk management discipline.
Matt Erickson, a senior analyst with Terrain. Dairy markets are showing signs of recovery with improving product prices despite the continued growth in milk production. Strong domestic demand for high-protein dairy products and tighter inventories actually helping support prices for butter, cheese, and non-fat dry milk, signaling a shift back toward market balance. Milk production increased 3.4% year-over-year in January. That's according to the National Milk Producers Federation, driven by a larger herd and steady output per cow. Demand continues, though, to be driven by consumer interest in protein-rich foods like Greek yogurt, cottage cheese, and high-protein beverages, which has reduced the amount of milk available for powder production. Margins under the Dairy Margin Coverage Program dropped to $7.81 per hundredweight in January, but are expected to improve as commodity prices rise in the coming months. U.S. ethanol exports eased slightly in February, but remained historically strong, shipments totaling almost 210 million gallons. But that's down 1% from January, though 36% above last year. Canada remains the top buyer, though volumes there dropped 12% to a 10-month low. European Union surged to a record 49.8 million gallons, led by strong demand from the Netherlands. India also increasing purchases sharply. Brazil, though, pulled back from January levels, still exceeded last year's pace. Strong demand for farm loans is supporting ag bank earnings, even as financial pressure builds across the crop sector. According to Kansas City Federal Reserve economist Ty Kreitman, farm loan balances at ag banks increased about 7% last year, helping drive improved profitability and stronger net interest margins. Returns on average assets also increased, reaching their highest levels since 2019. Increase in lending reflects tighter farm finances, reduced working capital, and higher input costs have pushed more producers to rely on credit, in particular for operating expenses. But at the same time, farm debt expanded with non-real estate loans up about 9%, real estate loans up 6% year over year. U.S. sugar program drawing renewed attention as producers and critics debate its role in today's market. Policy designed to support domestic sugar beet and sugarcane production, but questions remain about its impact on prices, trade, and long-term supply stability. For supporters, they say the program essential to compete against heavily subsidized global sugar system uses tools like price support loans, import limits, and supply controls to stabilize the market. Critics, though, say the program keeps U.S. sugar prices above global levels, point to import restrictions and tariff that limit competition and increase costs for businesses and consumers. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
After a surplus of milk in global markets pulled down milk prices at the end of 2025 and into the beginning of 2026, prices rebounded sooner than expected.
Ben Lane is a dairy analyst with Terrain.
That surplus isn't fully alleviated, but a mismatch in the supply and demand of individual commodities is sparking volatility that could provide a lift to some milk prices and opportunities to hedge going forward. Cheese and butter typically drive milk's value in the U.S. These higher value consumer products drive the prices of Class 3 and Class 4 milk by determining the values of protein and fat. The byproduct of cheese manufacturing is whey, and the byproduct of butter manufacturing is non-fat dry milk. These powders have headed for export markets historically. As a result, most of the high-value milk has remained in the U.S., where it can capture its highest value in the form of butter and cheese, while exports have been heavily skewed towards skim solids. Through late summer and fall 2025, commodity prices for butter and cheese collapsed. Whey was the only exception, with growing demand for high-protein powders reducing the supply of sweet dry whey. Non-fat dry milk had been lackluster throughout the turbulence, but through January and early February, prices for the commodity skyrocketed. Consumers are undergoing a variety of shifts domestically and abroad that are shaking up those traditional component mixes. Estimates point to around 8% of Americans taking GLP-1s as of 2024. That's likely higher by this point and will increase as new pill forms and other varieties are developed. Importantly, the impact isn't isolated to those taking the drugs. Some 16% of households include at least one person using GLP-1s, and food purchasing patterns will likely change for the entire household. New products being developed and marketed will likely appeal to a broader set of consumers than just GLP-1 users. In the medium term, pressures are driving changes at the macroeconomic level. Inflation for food away from home has been persistently higher than food prepared at home since March 2023, meaning that eating out has become more expensive more quickly than staying in. This matters for dairy demand because Americans tend to eat more cheese-heavy dairy away from home, think pizza and cheeseburgers, than when they prepare their own food. Food service is also an important outlet for butter and cream. Long-term, aging populations both domestically and in many of our key dairy export destinations will influence demand. In the Big Shrink research series, Terrain analysts detail the impact of aging populations on agriculture. For dairy, aging populations are a mixed bag. In the U.S., younger people in their key pizza-consuming years have been shrinking as a share of the total population, while those over 60 who are not eating nearly as much pizza have become the fastest-growing segment. Meanwhile, alongside the aging populations abroad, incomes are rising among populations in many of our export destinations, and demand for higher value and higher fat dairy products like cheese and butter are climbing. The net result of these shifts is that a bigger share of U.S. milk fat production is looking to export markets for value, while skim solids are trying to sort out ways to capitalize on strong protein demand at home. This means cheese and butter are increasingly reliant on export sales. This is fine, except when world prices are low. U.S. prices need to fall to remain competitive. In the case of non-fat dry milk, not only have world prices improved, giving domestic prices a boost, but supplies were already relatively tight with the stream of skim solids looking for ways to deliver protein elsewhere in the value chain. Non-fat dry milk prices climbed from $1.18 per pound at the beginning of 2026 to over $1.60 per pound by early February. This has dramatically lifted Class 4 milk out of the doldrums, with futures prices over $18 per hundredweight from March onward versus a January price of $13.55 per hundredweight as of this writing. Class 3 milk has improved less dramatically, but is supported largely by whey prices of between 70 cents and 75 cents per pound. Cheese and butter prices have improved from their lows, but to a lesser degree. If they continue to improve, it would provide even greater support to prices later in 2026. But for now, it's the powders that have provided the strength.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We saw higher than expected corn acres, and corn had higher acres, soybean had lower acres than had been expected, and a number of other crops, ups and downs, lower grain sorghum acres than we had expected coming in, higher cotton.
Kansas State grain marketing economist Dan O'Brien.
Interesting to see that. And with regard to stocks, we didn't have many changes other than for U.S. corn. We had a record high number, the highest since I believe back in 1923, ever since they started keeping records. So that's indicative and a follow through from the large crop harvest we had in 2025. We've got that. At the same time, we really have pretty good usage going on, thankfully. So there's that issue. For soybeans, we had a five-year high in stocks. For wheat, also a five-year high. So from the stocks report, we got the message of abundant supplies that we're still working through from the 2025 harvests, with wheat included. And again, from the prospective plantings report, at least at this time, a higher number for corn, lower number for soybeans than we had thought. So, and when you look at the specifics, there was, in that corn number, a projection of 95.338 million acres of corn to be planted. The market was expecting about 94.3. So about 970 million acres more than had been expected by the trade coming in. And with that, we haven't seen the corn markets just, quote, crater, very, very scientific term, that it kind of drifted lower, but we haven't seen a 15, 20, 30 cent drop or anything like that. There is some expectation that, that corn number, corn acreage number could decline off into the future, particularly when we get to the acreage report at the end of June coming up, concerns about high fuel and fertilizer prices that might give farmers an economic incentive to cut back to something lower than the 95.3 million that was there. So we shall see. We won't see that acreage figure have much impact on the upcoming April 9th WASDA report. But when we add in the next marketing year to the USDA's numbers and their May 12th report, then yes, we'll see that. Well, I'm sure the USDA, unless there's a major surprise, they'll plug in 95.3 million acres for plantings for 2026. They'll put a yield number on there, probably the 183 or thereabouts for what they'd had in what they put on from the USDA Ag Outlook Conference in late February. And we'll come up with 15.6, 15.8, something like that, billion bushels of corn projected. And we'll watch where weather takes us, planting progress takes us and all from there. For the soybean number, again, a little bit lower than had been anticipated. Again, 84.7 million acres. That's just marginally above what the USDA had projected in the Outlook Conference. We're about 3.5 million acres higher than last year for beans. So we 3.4 million acres less corn, 3.5 million acres more of soybeans. So you're just seeing these two bounce back and forth. But again, going back to the old adage, farmers will vote with their planters, and we'll see what finally happens. So weather, price expectations, all a number of other things, along with cost of production, profitability expectations, all will have a play in that.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The president and Secretary Rollins have held firm on their commitment to make farmers first.
Dan Hunter is the state executive director for the Texas Farm Service Agency.
You know, many producers were trying to figure out how they were going to make their next operating systems work, make sure that they were able to farm this past year. And back in December, of course, the president and secretary announced the Farm Bridge Assistance Program payment, which was $12 billion total. $11 billion of that went to traditional row crops and producers, and the other billion has gone to specialty crops. That has gone phenomenally because not only did we announce the assistance, but we've also announced an opportunity for people to be able to simplify that application process. And really all they had to do was if they could go in and log in on login.gov, it was a simple, we had your base acres. We knew what we were going to pay you. Literally took some people less than 15 minutes, and within 3 to 4 days, they were getting checks. To give you the idea, within 3 weeks, we put over $8 billion out to producers around the United States. In Texas, it was almost $800 million. So 10% of those dollars went to Texas. And we still have a few that still processing, some people who maybe needed to make some adjustments in their acreage. And I encourage you that if you have not signed up yet, go and talk to your FSA office. If you haven't created your login.gov account, go ahead and do it. That is going to be the future. Making sure that we are able to streamline, simplify the application process, not just for assistance payments, but also as you start looking at other, where there might be a disaster payment in the future, certifying crop acres, those types of things. The ideal, of course, is to get to that what we call one farmer, one file program. That way, when you go in and you're dealing with one part of the department, maybe it's NRCS, and then you walk next door and you do something with FSA, you don't have to go in and rewrite everything, resupply all that information. They're going to be able to pull that file and be able to transform all that information that you've put into one application into another. So it's been a great process. Right now, they've extended the deadline on the specialty crop side to $1 billion because here in Texas, needless to say, we've got a lot of specialty crops all the way from the valley to the panhandle. And so producers who have had acreage in specialty crops, make sure you go in. If you're not sure of whether or not you qualify, go talk to your local county FSA office. So it's been a great success. We've been able to put a huge amount of money out in a short period of time. And it's a tribute to the concentration and the work of those folks that are not only in our county offices, but also the leadership with Secretary Rollins and the president.
He talks about updating base acres.
Many of you have heard the term the One Big Beautiful Bill that was passed in July of last year and signed by the president. There were some provisions in there that didn't take effect immediately, but going to affect you in the future. And part of that is the ability to go in and update your base acres, which you haven't had a chance to do in quite some time. And so this is going to give us a chance to make sure that we're not only accurately reflecting what you're planning and doing out there, but that you're being able to sign up for the correct programs with the right amount of acres. So don't forget about that. As you have a chance to go in and update those acres, we want you to go ahead and do that. And again, also looking at how you restructure your organizations with regards for payment limits, those types of things, having those opportunities, make sure you get in and visit with your local county office. And as I mentioned before, as we move forward to more of an online platform, and people I know get scared, you know, am I going to do it right? Am I going to do it wrong? That's why we still have our county offices there. They're there to help you. They're there to assist. Make an appointment. Go in and say, hey, I'm not sure I'm doing this right. We want to make sure we get this done correctly, and we want to make sure you've done it correctly, because the last thing we want is for you to be in and have a situation where maybe you've not certified acreage correctly. Maybe you're not sure if you've got everything correct on your entities and those types of things. That is still going to be a giant need.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We also saw the all wheat number for the U.S. drop down to, in terms of prospective plantings, 43.8 million acres. That's down from 45.3 last year, about 1.6 million acres less.
Kansas State grain marketing economist Dan O'Brien.
Winter wheat, 32.4 million acres, lower by about 300 some million bushels than the U.S., than the trade had expected. That's down about the possibility. I think if we do switch around on that, there's a possibility. Fertilizer and factors like number came in at 6.12 million acres. Market was expecting about 6.5. We were at 6.64 last year. So question's been asked, well, will that number shift around? If we do see lower corn acres planted because of fertilizer and factors like that, will we see some of will those acres all go to soybeans in the central eastern corn belt, or will some of that switch, if it happens, come back to other crops in Kansas? Sorghum being the main one along with soybeans. And so it's a possibility. I think if we do switch around on that, there'd have to be a change in profitability expectations. So there's a long story a long discussion to have with regard to why we're seeing these trends for these different crops in the state. But, I think that'll all play out as we go. We also saw on some of the minor crops, canola, sunflowers here in Kansas, some pretty decent trends. Should go back to the hard red winter wheat acreage figure. So 2 years ago in Kansas, we had 7.6 million acres of hard red wheat having been seeded by USDA numbers. Last year, 7.3. This year, coming in at 7. So strong downtrend. And you wonder why did we end up with that here in state? I think when we were making those decisions last year, last fall, again for winter wheat coming into August, September, October, we just come out of a time frame when prices were at an almost a 45 degree angle down for most of 2025, and those price expectations that downtrend no doubt influenced farmers' expectations and impacted their plantings. Since then, actually for both sorghum and for wheat, we've seen some pretty good exports over these last several months for sorghum and for wheat. So we shall see what farmers decide to finally do here, both in Kansas and also around the country. For grain sorghum, the highest bid, 406 in the Colby area. Soybean forward contract bids, all of them over $10, none of them to 11. Highest bids, 1089 in Hutchinson and Topeka, Saline area, 1084. Pittsburgh, 1084, 1064 in Garden City, and 1029 out in Colby. But Colby's a distance away from the processor, so it makes sense. And then for wheat, you know, with wheat harvest not that far away from us, we've got the highest cash bids in central Kansas, central eastern Kansas locations, 591 Salina, Hutchinson, Topeka. The best forward contract bids, actually 605, 606 in those same locations. So harvest is approaching for wheat, and we've got these other commodities showing seasonality in terms of these moves. Overall, again, strong corn acres, weaker soybean acres. We'll see if that shifts around some by the time we actually get things planted. And be curious to watch over the next several months how the sorghum acreage and hard red winter wheat acreage numbers finally play out.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today, purplewave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
One of the things that we've long used in diets of lactating dairy cows is corn silage, and it's an excellent feed. However, one of the drawbacks of corn is that it requires a lot of irrigation water.
Kansas State Dairy Specialist Dr. Mike Brook.
Maybe choosing a type of forage that would require less water might be to our advantage. So one of the things that we often discuss is sorghum silage and different sorghum hybrids that we might utilize. And in the past, we've tried many of these in dairy rations and generally as a total replacement for corn silage. Most of those experiments have not been very favorable when it comes to milk production, and therefore it has caused us as an industry to shy away from utilizing sorghum in the diets. However, if we look at some of the changes in forage genetics and how that's impacted sorghums that are available to us, we might want to take a second look at this particular crop. Now, how about on the feeding side? What things there can be done to improve the utilization of sorghum silage in our dairy rations? Well, one thing we might look at is the choice of the hybrid that we plant. Recent studies have shown that when you plant a BMR male sterile hybrid, these hybrids do not produce grain, but they have a much higher sugar content in the forage. When we replace 25 or 50% of the corn silage in a diet with this type of forage, research from Texas A&M has shown that we can see an increase in energy-corrected milk when feeding diets that contain some of the BMR male sterile sorghum hybrid. So, as we look at many of the older studies that have been conducted comparing corn silage and sorghum silage, need to recognize that these were different hybrids when it came to the types of sorghum that were tested. And generally, most of those studies, it was a full replacement, not a partial replacement for the corn silage in the lactating diet. Another major issue has been starch availability when we talk about the conventional forage sorghum hybrids that are available to us. The berry or the seed of the sorghum plant is very hard and has a dense seed coat. When we chop this for silage, we do very little generally to reduce the integrity of that seed coat. Therefore, the starch availability is not very good when we feed it to the dairy animal, and lots of that starch will actually pass out the rear of the animal and into the manure pile, so we don't get any benefit for the starch that is actually there. However, some equipment has been designed that does a better job of processing that sorghum berry, therefore breaking it up and making more starch available. In fact, some of the recent studies from Texas A&M have shown that the starch availability of in situ experiments have demonstrated that for sorghum silage processed with this new equipment, we would see about a 66% availability of the starch after 90 days of ensiling. This is very, very good news and demonstrates that there are some things that we can do to increase the starch availability and probably reduce the milk yield losses that we might see if we do utilize sorghum silage into the diets of lactating dairy cows. So, as you consider what types of forages you might grow, if water is limiting in your area or you're looking for ways to conserve the amount of irrigation water that is going into crop production for your dairy farm, you might want to consider these two items as you make your selections for forages.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.